Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me a share of the property that will belong to me.' So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout the country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his field to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything." But when he came to himself, But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to spare, but here I am dying of hunger? I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran out and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead, and he is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate." Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound." Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him, but he answered his father, "Listen, for all these years I've been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command, yet you've never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when the son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you kill the fatted calf for him. Then his father said to him, Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found.
Think about that image of a tight-fisted brother and a generous parent just waiting to pour out all of the riches of home, and you're left wondering, what is that brother going to decide? Is that brother going to let go of the fist and open up to receive, or is that brother going to remain there and say, no, I don't want to be a part of that? We are left wondering. One of the greatest stories in the Bible, in fact, people who know very little about the Bible typically recognize a story called the prodigal son, a well-known story that Jesus intentionally leaves us walking away wondering, what's the end of all that? That's because Jesus told the story for some elder brothers in his time, not literal brothers, but the religious people of Jesus' day, who tended to make being home in the faith about our deserving, our meriting, our being good enough to have a place there, to earn our right to be at the table. And he gears this story for those folks to say, now how are you going to remain with all of that? Are you going to continue to live the rest of life with it being about us and them? Every culture, every society, any grouping of people typically has a them against which they identify themselves. How do you know who you are? Well, we're not them. Now, let's just try that out today. Let's see if you can recognize a few thems today. If you are a Republican, them is the Democrats. If you are a Northerner, them is a, and by the way, that works the other way around, just in case you didn't know. Yeah. If you pull for the Colts, them is the, those stinking Patriots, that's right. If you are an IU fan, them is, who said Duke? Somebody's, you just became my them, yeah. You get the idea. Them is others. And Jesus told this story for good religious people who made them the irreligious people. People not deserving of God's favor and grace. People who were beyond that deserving. People who were lost. Lost meaning no hope for them. So Jesus tells some stories about what it means to be lost. And he redefines lost in such a way that he radically redefines for many people the nature of God. He tells a couple of warm-up stories about being lost. He talks about a sheep wandering away from the fold so that the shepherd abandons the flock to go in search of the one. He tells about a woman missing a coin in her house, and so she lights a lamp, like the lamp I had last week. And she searches the whole house until she finds that one lost coin. With those two stories alone, Jesus tells us some very important things about lostness according to Jesus. One of the ways Jesus defines being lost is that something of value is missing. That's what it means to be lost in this story. Something of value is missing. That means that whatever is lost is worth whatever it takes to the owner to go find it. Something of value missing. You think about these stories, lost also means that something is not where it belongs. A sheep is not in the fold. A coin is not in the purse. In other words, something has a place of belonging and it's not there. And then one more very important thing Jesus says about lostness is that we know something's lost when someone's looking. That's how we know something's lost. Someone is looking. And sometimes, we might not even know that something is lost until we realize there's a person searching. I'm going to tell you two stories this morning from my childhood. The first one happened when I was about 5 or 6 years old. My family went to visit relatives in southern Ohio. And one day we all went to the Cincinnati Zoo. That's the first time I had ever been to a zoo of any kind. And I was just mesmerized by all the animal habitats and watching the creatures. And my favorite stop was the last one of the day, the monkey habitat. I mean, I was just caught up in these monkeys swinging around and chattering and just looked like they were having a great time. I did not know. I wandered away. I didn't know my family was all out in the car, ready to leave, taking a head count. Where's Rob? Rob's not here. Where's Rob? He wandered off. Somebody's got to keep an eye on that boy. That's how the conversation goes with my family when I was growing up. So they all fanned out. They went searching the zoo. And, you know, I'm just happy as can be. I'm watching the monkeys. And then in the distance, I hear my uncle calling my name. And when I see him in the distance, I say, well, here I am. And he goes, Rob, and then lets out some other words along the way. You got to know my uncle. That was his way of saying, I am so glad I found you. Gets me and takes me back so we could all leave. I had no idea that I was lost until I discovered somebody had been looking for me. So Jesus talks about being lost in perhaps a different way than people typically meant that in Jesus' day. Sometimes in church, even today, we talk about lost people. We tend to think that what that means is that those who are in the church are found and everybody else is lost. That's not what Jesus meant at all. Jesus defined lostness in a way that you could be lost in church as well as out of the church. Because anybody, according to Jesus, is capable of feeling their self-worth in life diminished. Something of value is missing. Anybody can experience that. Anybody in church, outside of church, can experience a time in life when you feel like I'm just misplaced right now. I don't know where I belong. Jesus says that can happen to anybody. And everybody needs to know that we matter enough to the one who made us to be sought after. According to Jesus, everybody deserves to know that they are worth being sought. So lostness can apply to a lot of folks. So when he begins the next story about a father who had two sons, we can know one thing for sure. This is going to be a story about being lost. And sure enough, it begins with a younger brother who comes to his father one day with demanding hands. Give me my inheritance. This younger son is going to be lost in the way that a sheep gets lost. A sheep just nibbles its way into lostness, one bite at a time, believing that something more satisfying is away from where I am right now. Some people get lost that way. That's how the younger brother gets lost. There's something out there that's going to be better than what I have right now. And for some people, the only way they discover how good things are right now is to go on that search. And so the dad lets him. Now, something important to remember about inheritance in that day and time. Typically, the oldest son got a double portion of any other siblings. The oldest son got twice as much. So in this family, two boys, what does that mean? The oldest will get 2/3 and the younger 1/3. Older 2/3, younger 1/3. So the dad gives the son his inheritance. Now there are two shocking things about this. The first shocking thing is the request itself and the disrespect. When do you typically get an inheritance in life? When somebody dies. What is this son saying to his father? You might as well be dead for all I'm concerned. I care more about what you can give me than I care about you. Shocking. But the other shocking thing is that the father obliges the request. In that society, people listening to Jesus' story would have known that this dad had every right to disown his son on the spot and not give him a dime. In fact, it's even more than a right. It would have been an expectation. People listening to Jesus' story would have said, well, if this is real life and a father would have given his son that request, he wouldn't have been able to show his face in public. What a ridiculous story you're telling, Jesus. He would have been so ridiculed by his friends. They would never have let him forget that. Shocking. But the dad does. It's kind of like two modern day dads talking to each other, and one was lamenting about his rebellious son. He was telling all of the things his son had done. The other dad listened and finally said, you know, if that were my boy, I'd be done with him. And the other dad thought and he said, if he were your boy, so would I. It's easy to talk about being done with somebody when they belong to someone else. But when it's your child, when it's your son, it's a different story, isn't it? Jesus tells this story as if the dad is that kind of dad. I'm going to do something shocking that nobody else is going to understand, and they would not understand unless it is their child. So, the son gets the inheritance, and where does he go? Anybody remember the story? He goes to a far country. Now, where was that? I believe Jesus used that expression not in a geographic reference. I believe he used it as a values reference. That the boy simply went to another place where he did not have to live by the standards in which he grew up. It could have been the county line. It could have been the university. Now I'm at school. I can do as I please. I don't have to be home when my parents tell me. I'm not going to be quizzed when I get there about who was I with and what did I do. And I use this illustration with a daughter who's about to start university next week. And another one who says that she's watching on the internet from her dorm room right now. What we know is that this young man spent his inheritance in a way he never would have gotten away with back home. And he runs out of money. And it says that he was so hungry, he had hired himself out feeding pigs, and he wanted to eat what the pigs were eating. Now think about this for a moment. What did a Jewish person think about pigs? That they're unclean, right? You have nothing to do with pigs. Why? Pigs were unclean because of what? Pigs ate. What is it saying? That this boy is so desperate, he will violate everything about his upbringing because he wants to eat what the pigs are eating. People listening to Jesus' story would have said, now that is lost right there. That says right there he's beyond redemption. And yet Jesus says that is also when he had one of the most beautiful experiences in life. He realized his condition. He had a moment of clarity. He had a sense of remorse about the things in his life that got him to that place, and he wanted a change. You know what? The path that takes a person there is never pretty. It's always ugly. But when you get to that point, it's one of the most beautiful places you can be in life. When you say, I just want things to be different, and I am totally dependent on my Father's mercy and grace. That's all he had to go on. He decides to go back home knowing he's not a son anymore. He's already spent the inheritance. He cannot go home as a son. The only thing he can do is hope by his Father's grace that just maybe he could be a slave. But somebody else is lost in this story. And that's the elder brother. Have you ever thought about that? The elder brother's just as lost. He's lost like the lost coin. The lost coin did not do anything wrong, did it? The lost coin did not make a choice to leave. In fact, the lost coin was in the house. The elder brother was lost at home. He had lived with his father all his life and never understood the heart of his own dad. Never understood that his dad was just ready to give him everything. He didn't have to merit it. He didn't have to deserve it. His dad wasn't walking through the house with a checklist every day and deciding whether he was going to give him his full inheritance by how well he lived up to the demands. It was his. And he made it something different. He's lost too. So yes, it's a story about being lost, but it really is more about a story about being found. Helmut Tillich, theologian, said this story is misnamed by many people. We gave it a title. We call it The Prodigal Son. Really, the better title is to call it The Story of the Waiting Father. Because the father's the main character, not the sons. The father is the one who consents to bless and to give. The father is the one who, with a broken heart, patiently waits. The father is the one who pleads to come into the house. The father is the one who extravagantly forgives. This story, really, it's not about lostness of people. It's about the grace of a father. And Jesus uses this father to talk about important things of God. What are those? Think about a couple of things we learn about this dad in the story. That he believed your present condition does not have to be your permanent condition. The dad believed that. He believed it the day he gave inheritance to the younger son. That the present condition of that boy might not always be that way. Maybe one day, he'll have a change of heart. He won't look at me this way. He'll want to be home. He looked at the older son that way. That maybe he wouldn't spend the rest of his days hating his brother, choosing to be outside the house. That maybe he would want to come in. That Jesus is teaching us about a God who says your present condition in life does not have to be your permanent condition. God believes that. God believes that. This father is also one who restores. He restores. Think about what the dad in this story did. The son comes home. And what does the dad begin doing even before the son finishes his confession? It says he puts the best robe on him. What was that robe? That was a robe in many households that would have been reserved for special occasions when there was a guest of honor, the best robe, the guest of honor robe. He puts the guest of honor robe on the son. He gives him sandals for his feet. What does that mean? Slaves went barefooted. He puts sandals on. he puts a ring, the family ring, on his finger. This was the signet ring. This was the first century version of a credit card. It had the family emblem, so he could go into town and stamp the family stamp and buy things on credit. He killed the fatted calf, that animal that was just waiting for a special occasion for hundreds of people to come. What did this dad do? He restored him as a son again. He didn't just let him come home. He made him a full son again. And something else we learn about this dad. This dad wants his whole family to love that. This dad so desperately wants his whole family to share those values. He goes out to this older son, begging him to come in. Why? Because Jesus is teaching us about a God who wants all the elder brothers of faith to understand that it's really about the mercy of a loving God. And God wants God's family to love that way and to welcome people in. Tim Keller, in a recent book on the prodigal, talks about what this meant for the elder brother. Everything now left in the household of the family belongs to him, right? Because his brother's inheritance has already been given out. Everything there is now the older brother's. It's his. He looks at the ranch. He looks at the animals. He looks at that's his. What is his dad doing? He's putting his ring on his brother. He's putting his robe on his brother. He's killing his fatted calf for his brother. And he doesn't like it because it's costing him. It's costing him. What is Jesus teaching us with this parable? He's saying, our heavenly God so loves a family of faith that says we spare no expense to see that other people know the place of belonging and the sense of value that we know here. You know, last week when we had our missions update, and I updated two areas about a new worship service and a new facilities renovation, we met with the architects this past week. I shared last week about how excited I was about the pictures I was receiving. That was before I saw the budget this week for those pictures. Wow. Wow. I mean, when we talk about doing things that are going to help us be more effective at reaching other people, I just realized, yeah, that not much has changed. It still costs. It still cost. But how excited is God when a family of faith says, we're willing to invest, not just for our benefit, but for others. Why? Because the God we worship wants all of God's children at the table. So here's my second story, the last story about my childhood. My last story for this morning about my childhood. When I was in the second grade, one of the daily rituals was to pick up my lunch money on the way out the door to get on the bus in the morning. My parents would put lunch money out so I could buy lunch at the cafeteria. This was before the days of meal plans and swipe cards. You had to pay in cash. So they'd leave money for lunch. So one day, at recess, which my class had to take recess in the morning. We'd come to school for about an hour. We'd go out to the playground for recess, come in for about another hour, then it was lunch break. So out on the playground one morning, some other boys were off in the corner of the playground playing some games. So I went to find out. To this day, I can't remember what they were playing. Some kind of game, but what I remember is they were betting on the game that day. And they turned and looked at me and said, well, are you in or not? And I thought, well, I'm not going to be the chicken. They said, well, put your money out. Well, the only money I had is what my parents gave me, my lunch money. So I put my money down on the ground, and sure enough, the ball didn't bounce my way or the jacks didn't come up in my favor. Whatever the game was we were playing, I was out of my lunch money. But we had just come from break. I had my cookie and milk, and I wasn't feeling so hungry. I thought, what's the big deal? But an hour and a half later, when we were sitting in the lunchroom, And all of my friends around me had their trays with meatloaf and mashed potatoes and gravy and carrots. I was sitting there looking at a tabletop. I was going, man, I am hungry. I am hungry. And I'm bemoaning my bad decision, and I look up, and who is coming through the cafeteria door? My dad. Every now and then, my dad would join me for lunch, but it was not that frequent. And any time he came, he told me that morning, son, I'm going to come eat lunch with you today. First time he comes unannounced, and it would be that day. How could he know? So he scans the room, he sees me, he walks over to me, and when he gets up and sees what's going on, everybody around me eating and I'm not, he just sits down across from me, and he leans over and says, why aren't you eating, son? And I tried to lie my way out of it. I said, oh, I'm not feeling too hungry today. I just wanted to save my money. And he leaned over so that none of the other boys would hear, and he said, bull. You never miss a meal. Now, why aren't you eating? And tears kind of come into my eyes, and I know I'm caught, and I said, because I gambled your money and lost it. He got up from his chair and he said, come with me. Now, I did not know what that meant, but I knew I did not want to find out in front of all my friends. So he led me out of that lunchroom back to the front of the line, and he put a tray on the rack and put some silverware there, and then he got a tray and put it out for himself, and we went through the line, and he got me meatloaf and mashed potatoes and carrots, and we went and we sat down, and I just sat there and waited for the lecture. I waited for the punishment. Nothing came. We just ate together because that's why he came. To just be at the table with me. And sometimes people get close to a seeking, searching God and they get afraid because they say, I know why that God is looking out for me. God knows what I've done in my life. God has come to punish me. I already feel bad enough for the things I've squandered in my life. I don't want to be near. And it takes loving family to help somebody know, no, that's not why he's looking for you. He wants to make sure you're at the table. He will do anything to make sure you are at the table. Sometimes we squander the blessings we've been given. Sometimes we hold on so tight to what we have, we forget that the great blessing is to give it away. And we all need to be reminded that we need to be found all the time. Here's what I'd like to do as we close. I'd like to just lead us in a time of prayer. And you heard that refrain we sang earlier during the scripture lesson from the hymn that was written for the story that we are talking about today. Come ye sinners, poor and needy. The words are on the screen, and as I lead us in different petitions in this prayer, we'll just pause and sing that together. And then I'll lead us in another prayer. So right now, as we pray, I invite you to cup your hands together like this. Would you do that? Just everybody, cup your hands together. And Lord, we recognize that at different times in our lives, we may have been demanding of what we want you to do in our lives, what we want from you, caring maybe more about what you can give us than what we really cared about you. And sometimes we let our hands fall open, and by our own decisions, we've squandered the things that you've given us. And we just need to remember today, Lord, you don't come to punish us as we simply recognize that when we put our hands together like this, it's because we know we need to be blessed by you. We need your grace and mercy. And so we come today. And then maybe sometimes we've had our fist clenched and we clench them now, recognizing that at different times we've been older brothers. We've been resentful of other people who didn't merit the grace and forgiveness maybe that they received. People who just have annoyed us by their failure to live up to the things we know we should all practice in life. Sometimes we've clenched our fists together, working so hard to make life about what we deserve. And God, we get mad sometimes at you because we serve you faithful and we wonder, how could you let some things happen to us that have happened? We just walk around mad. We don't want to be those kinds of people. We want to be people who at the end of the day say, your blessings far outweigh any of the difficulties and challenges of life. And so we open up our hands and say, Lord, help us to be that family that takes great delight in understanding our need for you and sharing it with others. Now for this last one, I invite you to stand, a prayer that we make our benediction this morning. And rather than cupped hands, I invite you to put outstretched arms in front of you. Because God wants to give us far more than we can even imagine. That sometimes what we're guilty of is being prepared to receive too little from God. And God's mercy, grace, blessing, power is boundless. So we stretch out our arms today just to say, Lord, help us to live with grateful hearts and receptive spirits, understanding that we all need your mercy. We all live every day thinking not about what we've merited in life, but what we have the gift of receiving from you. So as open-armed as we are right now toward you, may we be just as open-armed in sharing your blessings with others, letting all people know that your great desire is that we should be at the table with you. And so we sing.